Jeff Katz joins us on Sports Byline. I think most people who have listened to me on Sports Byline for so many years know I really like insightful, well-written sports books, and we have better than 700 sports author interviews in our library, and I've come across another one. I hope you'll check it out. Jeff Katz is the author. He is also the mayor of Cooperstown, New York, the birthplace of baseball and the home to the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's written several books. His latest is called Split Season, 1981, Fernando Mania, The Bronx Zoo, and The Strike That Saved Baseball. And this book is the never-before-told of the 1981 Major League Baseball strike, the first mid-season strike in sports history. Jeff, why did the 1981 season become the subject for this book?
When the 81 strike hit, I was 18 going on 19. Life was very much still about baseball for me. So the absence of the 712 games that disappeared off the schedule in the summer always stuck with me. There was also an image that Roger Angel wrote, the great Roger Angel, talked about the silence of that summer, how all the ancillary noise of baseball, radio, in cabs, passing by electronic stores and seeing the games on TV, how it all disappeared. And just that image of that kind of silent summer stuck with me. And I always wanted to know more about it. But there had never been a book about it. Not even in 1982 did anyone write a book about the strike of 81. So I wrote it. I wanted to read a book about it, so I wrote it.
You know what I find significant is in the mid-70s, we came into free agency in Major League Baseball. And correct me if you think I'm wrong about this, but what happened in 1981 to me was the first real challenge to that. Am I correct in that thinking?
Yes, you are. Although we have to backtrack to 1980 when there was almost a strike in May of 1980. All issues were settled except for free agent compensation, which was left on the table to be hashed out. So the seeds of 1981 were planted in 1980. But you're right, this was the owner's attempt to kind of crush free agency in its infancy.
Take me into 1981 and through the months leading up to Memorial Day.
So as I said, the 1980 season was saved by a settlement, and the result was a procedural agreement about compensation for free agency. Owners wanted what they call direct compensation. Team loses a free agent to another team, then the team that has lost that free agent gets to pick a player from the major league roster, starting at the 16th best player. Each team was allowed to freeze 15. The player saw that for what it was. By making free agency a trade, it would restrict salaries, it would restrict movement. Not everyone was Dave Winfield, right? There were guys who were kind of middle-of-the-pack starters, you know, fourth outfielders, non-stars, who it would be crazy for a team to sign if they had to give up one of their good players. Still, the agreement was the owners could implement that plan of direct compensation, but if they did, the players had the right to strike. In the interim, it had been agreed upon to have a joint study committee between players, reps, and owner reps. The players, you know, love them or hate them, and I hope people who read the book understand them better. The players came to the table with great sincerity. Owners said there were problems in competitive balance with free agency. The players came with charts of the first few years showing that more teams were in competition because of free agency. Owners said that, you know, players were moving around too much. Players showed that there was actually a similar stability in the rosters. Attendance was going up, kind of refuting the owners' claims that the game was falling apart economically. The owners would kind of pay lip service to the concerns they had, and what I found in my research, their notes from their own private meetings showed that they were never intending to negotiate. They were going to implement their plan, pretend it was a done deal, force the players to strike if that was the case. Knowing the owners were going to do that, they got $50 million in strike insurance for 1981. So they were provoking a strike to only take place in 81, and they got what they sought for.
Let's talk about the major figures in this. Commissioner is Bowie Kuhn of baseball, and the union boss at that time was Marvin Miller. Tell me how they figured into all of this.
So Miller and Kuhn actually go back to about 1966 when Kuhn was the National League lawyer and Miller came in from U.S. Steel to run the Players Association, which was really a non-existent force. It was really a company-run union, quite illegally so. And Miller came from a more professional labor background and saw that, you know, the players were treated poorly. I think there's a great Miller quote that says, when you come to an industry that's 100 years behind the times, it's easy to make a lot of forward strides. Kuhn, who ascended to the commissionership in 69, really kind of saw himself in the same vein as a Judge Landis, a Happy Chandler, Ford Frith, these kind of autocratic commissioners who had come before him. But sadly for Kuhn, those commissioners never had a deal with Marvin Miller, who was smarter, more insightful, had a plan to improve the rights of the union. So they butted heads from the beginning, but Miller was on the right side of history and made all the advances for the players that we see today.
Aside from Marvin Miller being who he was, did he have an advantage in a sense because he was a single soul leading the way, whereas Bowie Kuhn had to report to the owners, and so you weren't quite sure whether they were all going to be united or not?
Well, it's interesting. The kind of conventional wisdom was that the owners were an easily united force, and the players were always going to be lacking in unity, right? The owners always felt that when the players missed a paycheck or two, they'd come crawling back. But the reality was the owners had 26 at the time, 26 different interests, and the players had one. You know, in a grand way, the union was a team, and the players were competitive guys trained in a team sport. They were always going to stay together, and the owners constantly misread the players because they saw the players as dumb jocks who were being led around by the nose by Marvin Miller, but that was not the case.
Why did they stay together? What was the glue that kept them that way?
Well, what Miller did effectively that is maybe little understood is he was truly an educator. He would talk to the players about labor law, about where they stood, about where they could go, and the process to get them there. And they understood that. They had been treated shabbily. You know, you tend to think of professional athletes as very powerful, strong people. But there's stories from people like Duke Snyder, Bob Feller, who were involved in the Players Association, who would go to the owners to ask for stalls on, or doors on bathroom stalls. And the owners would say, like, come on, go away. You don't need that. So that's how powerless they were. So now the players had a guy come in who showed them that they could have a legitimate and real say in their own careers, similar to what we all have, the right to work where you want to work. And the players saw in his lessons and in his advice where they could go, and they stuck together from the big to the small. You know, we forget that the leadership of the union in the 70s and 80s was really the superstars. I mean, Johnny Bench was involved, Tom Seaver was involved, Pete Rose. At various times, the player reps were the highest paid and most star-powered players in baseball. And if the big guys were going to put themselves on the line, certainly the small guys were going to. So it was easy for them to stick together.
We've got about 90 seconds before we have to break here. Is there any correlation about what happened in 1981 and baseball also having a strike in the early 90s?
Kind of. You know, so in 81, it was a way to crush free agency, which would put a lid on salaries. Salaries, again, that the owners were writing the checks for. Players can make demands. They can't ultimately write that check. By 94, free agency was not going to be dealt with. It was a done deal. So what the owners tried to do to kind of control their own impulses was to create a salary cap. The players were going to have none of it. For some reason, again, the owners thought the players wouldn't stand together, would fall apart, they'd miss a paycheck, they'd come crawling back. That was never going to be the case, so the owners kind of stumbled their way into a strike again.
In about 30 seconds, how was the 81 strike settled ultimately?
Ultimately, the owners of strike insurance was about to run out, so they had a real incentive. But also, the players were still strong. The owners weren't getting any headway. Their disunity was a huge problem for their negotiation team because many of the owners felt the issue at hand was not worth the strike. So there was a lot of pushing for a settlement, and that push grew and grew till it was they weren't able to hold it back.
This is a wonderful book. Jeff Katz, the author, has joined us. He is also the mayor of Cooperstown, New York, which is, of course, as you probably know, the birthplace of baseball and the home to the Baseball Hall of Fame. He has written other books, but his latest is one that will give you great insight to something that happened and never had happened before, and it's called Split Season 1981, Fernando Mania, the Bronx Zoo, and the strike that saved baseball. We'll talk about why it saved baseball, and we'll talk to about some of the other things that happened during the course of that 1981 season that really falls into place with this book and what Jeff is talking about. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.